You're listening to Munch, a podcast and website where we pair meals with movies. I'm Ben.
I'm Andre.
I'm Leanna.
And this week, we're here talking about the Brad Bird directed and screenplay by... sorry, I messed that up. All right. Let me redo that. From the top. Let's go over again. The screenplay and directed by film... see? This is not easy to do that.
Screenplay by and direct... Screenplay and directed by...
Brad Bird.
Couldn't you just say written and directed by?
Yeah, written and directed by is what people normally say, but we like to put
our own. But the screenplay thing is like a little weird, like, because it's not quite written.
Yeah.
All right. I think you're right, though. Written and directed by Brad Bird.
So what did we
The
watch?
Classic
screen
film.
Written and directed cult. By. Screen written and directed by.
Ooh.
Screen written and directed by. Yeah, that
works.
That
yeah.
checks out.
Yeah.
Screen written and directed by Brad Bird. Director of The Incredibles and Mission Impossible Ghost Nation?
Ghost Protocol.
Ghost
Both
Protocol?
Which came out after this movie.
Yeah. So he's been on the up and up. And we just sat down and watched Iron Giant, the cool 1 hour and 26 minute film that is darn near perfection, if you ask me.
Yeah, 14 out of 10.
That's a 14 out of 10.
Just on length alone?
Yeah.
Real good.
It's hard to get better than 14 out of 10, honestly.
Yeah, I mean, you could make a 45-minute movie and call it Queer Eye.
And it would be 100% on Rotten Tomatoes.
Yeah.
Basically just as good. But we just sat down and watched Iron Giant. Why we asked Iron Giant, you may
ask. I think we need to acknowledge it.
The cat is walking across a paper bag. In as many steps as possible. You didn't think it would take 12 steps to walk over a paper bag, but you've never been a cat.
But listener, what you didn't know is that we just prevented the cat from jumping on top of the blanket fort that we've made.
Would have been a lot worse.
It would have been a lot worse, but it makes our voices sound so crisp.
So crisp.
How crisp?
So crisp.
So crisp.
So clean.
Anyway.
So crisp and so clean.
We're off to a great start.
Yeah, so we just sat down and watched Iron Giant. Why we watched Iron Giant, you may ask. Well, there may be a little film called The Holy Grail of Pop Culture, Ready Player One.
Who's calling it that?
I don't know. It was just in the first trailer. It was in the first trailer.
No. That's the kind of thing Variety
it
would
was
say.
Variety.
Ready Player One called itself that.
Which, oh, even better.
Says a lot about the film and perhaps what they think of the book. But Iron Giant appears in Ready Player One because of that pop culture thing.
How much money do you think Vin Diesel made off of that?
None. I don't think he's voiced.
How much do you think Brad Bird made off of it?
None.
What about Andrew Bird?
Well, if Andrew Bird was able to get his one drawing of Nicolas Cage and his hair turning into an eagle into Ready Player One, then I think he probably made at least $100 off of it.
Cool.
I was going to say $50, but...
I think Andrew Bird originals cost a little more than that, but I don't know. Okay. I haven't checked in on him.
Do you think
Andrew Bird... The Holy Grail of Pop Culture, illustrator extraordinaire. Have you not seen Andrew Bird's stuff?
I thought he was a who am I thinking of? Musician.
Babe, I don't even know at this point.
Andrew, oh, I know who you're talking about.
Yeah.
I want to say Alan, but that's not it.
I'm pretty sure it's Andrew Bird.
So there's this really cool website called Google, and you could just like look that up in your own time.
Google?
Instead of wasting our listeners' time. Also, how much money do you think Vin Diesel got paid if there's any speaking lines for the Iron Giant in Ready Player One?
I don't think there's any speaking lines. It's purely cameo.
Okay.
It's just like, hey, everyone, look, here's Iron Giant.
Transition,
thanks,
then.
Thank you
how
for
much
your,
do you
our
think
money.
Vin Diesel got paid for this movie where he had 6 speaking lines?
And probably like 2 hours of work?
Yeah.
I'm going to guess 10,000.
Okay.
I'd say 20.
You're going to say 20?
Yeah.
Like, maybe... I don't have the best understanding of Vin Diesel's talent, and I'm sorry, Vin Diesel, if that's the case, but maybe Vin Diesel is an incredible voice actor.
Andrew Bird is an American violinist, singer, and songwriter, so it seems like I was right.
Are you sure it's not both?
It doesn't say he has ever drawn Nicolas Cage. If I were to Google Andrew Bird Nicolas Cage, do you think anything would show up?
I think Ben just did.
Okay.
I'm anything? In a unique right, position where I can see what both it? Of you are Googling.
That is a very unique position.
What is you know who's not in that position? Listeners.
Okay. All right. So anyway, Andrew Bird is a singing artist.
Why are we talking about Andrew Bird still?
Because we're off to a great start. Is he a local musician?
He was the
I don't know.
It was his nickname in this movie was
Dean.
He's a artist and what? Not a garbage artist.
Why don't you guys tell me what you cooked for this
Brandon
meal?
Bird. We would... Sorry, that's on me. You're okay. Right. You're right.
Thank you.
That's on me.
Thank you.
That is all on me. So for this meal, we cooked a interesting selection of foods that, while on the surface may not seem to have a direct connection to the film, they all have the connection of iron, being high in iron particularly.
Because that's what you need if you're an iron giant.
He only eats metal in this movie, and it's a major plot point.
I'm going to say he only eats iron for the sake of our argument.
Yep.
Yeah.
There's a definitely 100%. On my head.
The Nicolas Cage Brandon Bird photo you're talking about, is that a picture of Nicolas Cage's head on a dragon? Is that the one you're thinking of?
No, that's not the one. That's a good one, though.
Okay.
Do anyway. Nicolas Cage. Eagle top 10 Brandon
I'll Bird. Tell you what.
There better be a link in our podcast to this photo because this is getting out of hand.
You're all right. Oh, wait. Segue. On Brandon Bird's website, in the top, in the O in the Brandon, there is a yellow circle. Within that yellow circle is a drawing of Vin Diesel bringing it back to Iron Giant and our menu. Bam!
Wow.
Cool.
We did it, you
You're
guys.
Right. That is Vin Diesel.
It's that like, is just, Vin Diesel.
Should we just end it
that's
there?
A full circle.
I think that's...
I don't think... I mean, we came full
that's
circle.
That's a conversation.
No one expected us to get full circle this early, but we did it. So I feel like we should just quit while we're ahead and, like, good day.
Yeah, this podcast isn't going to get any better. That's for
it's
sure.
It's definitely not.
So we briefly mentioned our meal. Now it's movie time. It's time to talk about the film.
Also want to set up a Brandon Bird podcast Jesus. That we can record separately.
Do you have
because there's
name
a
for
whole
it?
Lot here.
Do you have a name for it?
Flipping the Bird.
I like it. I like
it's like
it.
He has a whole Nicolas Cage sticker set. I'm not looking at it anymore.
It's good
but
though, isn't it?
There's a lot to unpack there.
There's a lot to think about.
I just found something
you want
pretty cool.
For your birthday, which is coming
right
already happened. It's already happened.
It's already happened by the time this one comes out.
Yeah.
And Ready Player One, we've probably already seen it at this point.
Hopefully. That would have been great if we had seen it so then we could include on
yeah.
this. You know what's really great about this podcast?
True, how respectful
talking
was
about
it?
All the things that we could have done on this podcast, that
just
makes
like
for a really
our
good
general
podcast.
Sense of time on this podcast.
Kind of all off.
No, it's like, it's pretty great.
Oh, is that? Sorry, I missed what you were saying.
All right.
Andre's just over there shaking.
Yes, and all positivity in this corner.
Leanna keeping us honest. So, Iron Giant. Wow, I did not do my research because when did this come out? It came
99.
Out in 1999. We were all 9 years old.
And I'll tell you a little fun fact I found out. Vin Diesel, the movie he did before this, Saving Private Ryan.
What?
Yeah.
Wait, he was in Saving Private Ryan.
Tell me about it. That was the biggest movie he was in before this. The only big movie he was in before this.
Yeah, that's
it's
true.
2 years this before is, The Fast and the
Yeah,
Furious.
This is before his yeah. big break.
Yeah.
So
he was
our,
an unknown
our kind
quantity
of
at
joke
this point.
Before this was, why did they have to like blow their budget on Vin Diesel for the four lines? But Vin Diesel was pretty unknown in 99. The world hadn't yet experienced
yeah,
Diesel
so
magic.
He
yeah.
probably
Diesel
thought
mania.
Of it as an opportunity.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah.
I mean, he went out for this seriously, and I'm assuming he won this role, which I would love to see that tape.
Who else
okay.
do you think applied?
I imagine that, okay, who else applied? Probably.
I bet Arnold Schwarzenegger
Sylvester
did?
Stallone.
Okay, that was mm-hmm. going to be my other suggestion, yep. But like Arnold Schwarzenegger in particular, because he was the Terminator.
That is a good point, and they probably thought that was a little too close to home, and they weren't trying
like
to be
too
that
on the nose.
Yeah, exactly.
But at the same time, I bet they felt conflicted because they were like, it's something that parents and kids can enjoy.
Yeah.
Which is the goal of every kid's movie.
That's true. But Vin Diesel wasn't a beloved household name at that point yet.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Let's talk about this film as being a kid's film. To your point, Leanna, you just mentioned it, so I'm bringing it to that as a conversation point.
Look at me, pushing the podcast along.
You're doing great.
Yes.
This film deals with a lot of serious subject matter. One, there is multiple moments where a bomb is seen either in a PSA-style thing or an actual bomb is deployed and eventually going to kill an entire town. There's, like, a lot of strong themes. Do you feel like – and there was at times as I was watching this, I was like, wow, I wonder how I would take this as a kid because it is not a lighthearted film necessarily all the time. And maybe it does a good job of balancing it, and maybe media for kids should be able to have those moments where it can talk about difficult subjects like militarization, guns, and things like that. But
I think I saw it fairly close to when it came out. Okay. I remember being really young when I saw it, and I think a lot of those messages were completely over my head. I think I looked at them with very youthful, naive eyes and didn't catch the message behind it because they were often presented in like a humorous or plot forward way where you can easily just follow along on the surface and not read into the tone beneath it. And I think that's what I did as a kid. And now watching it as an adult, a lot of those lines, a lot of those images have a lot more depth to them. Mm-hmm. And so I think that's part of where this movie succeeds, where a child can be introduced to some of those things. Like, there's lines that are undeniable. Like, the line where the Iron Giant says, I am not a gun, anyone can understand that, understand the meaning behind it. But then a lot of the other more complex parts are – like, a child is able to just kind of accept it as part of the plot and still enjoy watching the movie and get the message behind the Iron Giant himself, whereas adults hopefully are watching it and getting that deeper meaning without the kid feeling bored. I think it does a good job of balancing it, is what I'm trying to say.
Yeah. A thought that occurred to me when we were talking about this being a heavy movie was, well, there's other heavy kids movies like Bambi. And then I thought the hardest part about Bambi was watching the deer get shot by the hunter. And that is just a minor plot point in Iron Giant. They show that and it's like,
they pretty much reference it directly.
Yeah, right?
They're like, we understand that. Like, yeah,
yes,
that's
and.
Kids play.
Yeah, they yes-anded it. Like,
we are not only going to deal with
that concept.
You thought
hunting was bad. How about war?
Yeah.
What is it good for? Absolutely nothing.
Yeah, like where Bambi doesn't necessarily interrogate the idea of guns itself, Iron Giant decides to go there and is like, guns killed this deer. I am going to talk through that.
And what are you supposed to do when a gun is pointed in your face except for shoot back? Like, it's talking about escalation. I mean, there's the whole backdrop of the Cold War where I'm only pulling out my weapons when I feel threatened by you. And
oh, yeah, that Dean has that line where he's like, no, you don't understand. It's only in defense. He won't shoot unless you shoot first. And the military just completely ignores that. Like, it's – and the way it's worded in such a way that you could hear a human actually saying those words without it being the movie trying to hit you over the head with a message.
Yeah.
Like, I think that was one of the scenes where I was like, wow, the movie does a really good job of integrating this message into just good dialogue.
Yeah, like those moments and those the phrases that the characters deliver have an incredible amount of weight while still being appropriate for a film and not feeling heavy-handed in a message, almost ultimately being a good kind of conversation point for whether you have that with your kid about the impact of guns. Like, it's easy to transition this film into a lesson or a talk about the role of guns or how like the military industrial complex may be a little bit over some kids' heads, but like starts to get at the idea that like how kind of the government is part of an arm of the military and how the military is driven and how it reacts and how that can ultimately escalate as opposed to using an opportunity for conversation and things like that. And it's really interesting and unique for that reason. Like, I can't think of many other films that do it this well.
Arrival, maybe? That was the adult take on...
Yeah, but like kids' films.
Kids' films, no.
Like, yeah.
But even adult films to that point, like, it is... Like, I'm not sure if it's just something, like, as we grow older and how we get kind of set in our ways. And because we get set in our ways, we are more likely to try and double down on what we believe. And that ultimately it's more like maybe having a conversation is the better outcome or the better course of action. But because as adults... we view ourselves as having these moments where we understand who we are as people and we will not stray from that. I wonder if that's like why ultimately the media we create somewhat finds ourselves in that same area.
Iron Giant, man.
Yeah.
It's a deep movie.
Like it's pretty darn good. Like Andre, before we really dove in, you were kind of unsure about the experience. I would love to hear from you.
Yeah, because you specifically said, like, I don't know, it's a kids' movie.
Yeah.
And I would love to hear about your experience about this, about watching this film and whether it exceeded your expectations, if you had a good time or if you ultimately came away from it thinking that it was still somewhat a kids' film and didn't necessarily get what you wanted out of it.
No.
All of which are viable options.
Yeah, I liked it. The animation was something very different than what I see coming out of animation studios these days, obviously. Totally different style. But it fit so well into a time period when I was watching kids' movies. Like, this is what animation looks like when I was... watching animated movies,
also,
which was kind of cool.
Not to interject, but the Iron Giant was so good.
The Iron Giant
was... The way they imagine him, all the details of his facial expressions, his eyes, his mouth, his hands, like...
He's very endearing.
Ugh, I loved it. I don't know how they made an 100-foot metal man adorable, but they did.
Yeah, because usually small things are cute, and like the cat who's walking on the bag again.
Again?
But, yeah, he's gigantic and very endearing. Yeah, it wasn't... What am I trying to say? The movie never felt too... Like, I feel like with a lot of kids' movies, they're filling in time with jokes and...
Here's this sequence with
totally
cute, small, adorable things that are
going
in
to
a large
sell,
quality. Yeah, and sell goods.
Toys later. Yeah, this one did not feel like that at all. It felt
true
tight
to its...
like he was trying to tell a story, and this is how I remember movies like Snow White being, which I don't know if I watched it again, it would still feel that way. But, like, the whole thing was...
It fits your memory.
Tight, yeah.
I mean, at 86 minutes, it's got to be pretty tight.
And yeah.
It definitely feels like there is not a lot in this film that is extraneous or unnecessary. Like, each mm-hmm. moment is considered and thought through, and whether that impacts or is built upon after that is thought through to build up for kind of this ultimate moment. Like, the deer dying is ultimately a moment to kind of reconcile what will probably happen to the Iron Giant later on, and kind of sets up some expectations for both what you should feel, but also providing the Iron Giant himself with a sense of understanding for the impact that that entire town dying would have.
Mm-hmm.
And so it is very well considered, and like moments of levity and fun are built as like short interludes between larger things. Like I think back to kind of the moment where they're swimming, and while and I think it provides a bit of levity between like the agent being tough on the kid between moments, because there's like almost essentially a torture scene at a certain point
mm-hmm.
while very lighthearted. And so kind of the swimming scene kind of provides a little bit of levity to like lift the spirits.
You got to have those decompressors.
Yeah. But the swimming scene is also something that as adults, like when that scene started immediately, I thought to myself, oh, I love this part.
Mm-hmm.
It's so cute. It's so endearing. It's so well done. There's a lot of kids movies where they have those same kinds of interludes of fun, and they're just juvenile and cheesy. Yeah. Yeah, and you're just, as an adult, you're sitting there and you're like, this is a waste of everyone's time. But in The Iron Giant, it's actually, it's really nice. It's a good reprieve. It's good.
On the topic of my experience, one other thing that occurred to me while I was watching this movie was how much the end reminded me of the end of Batman.
Which Batman?
The one I only saw once, the like Batman the last one.
Superman?
No. No, the one with Bane.
No, we've never Dark Knight seen
Rises.
That one.
Yeah, Dark Knight Rises, where Batman, there's a missile coming after him, so he flies away from the city so that the missile follows him.
Doesn't he pick up a bomb?
Oh, maybe that's it. Yeah, he picks up a bomb and he flies away from the city so that it doesn't blow up in the city.
Yeah.
That felt a lot like Iron Giant. And then it looks like he dies, but at the very end of the movie, it's like, don't worry, he's still alive, he's still around.
Similar in structure, but maybe not the same impact.
But that's kind of great because the Iron Giant wants to be a superhero, and it's a very superhero ending.
That is a good point.
Where the superhero makes the ultimate sacrifice, but because of his superhero nature,
mm-hmm.
he actually doesn't die. But he doesn't know that going into the sacrifice.
Right.
It's just you as a viewer get to have that hope and enjoyment afterwards. It's a reward for you. And it's really satisfying because the Iron Giant so many times tries to prove that he is Superman. It's just so great.
Yeah.
Yeah, that is
really cool. Makes a good Superman. He just wants to be the best he can be. I like when he knows he can't resist turning into a gun when he sees a gun, so he like blocks his own vision of the gun to avoid it. Just seeing like his personal struggle with retaliation there.
And also starting to understand himself and like his moments of aggression and how to evade that and ultimately like be a good person to those around him.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. There's just a lot of nicely thought through moments,
mm-hmm.
Which is rare to have that moment where you reflect back on something that happened in a film, let alone a kid's film, and you're like, yeah, well, that had a lot of impact and weight to it, and it was a subtle addition, but it was impactful. And those kind of moments are a little harder to be authentic about, and harder to ultimately have be effective as a viewer.
This is a kid's film where I will want to show it to my future kid.
Yeah.
Like, this is a movie where I would like to, I think it'll hold up, and I think I can show it.
So.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think definitely, like, if I had any problems with this film, it's that there's a single role for a single speaking role for one woman.
Oh, yeah.
In the film.
And no people of color?
Yeah, that's...
Not a single one.
Dean is like, maybe?
He's ambiguous.
He's ambiguous. But, like, there are multiple scenes where it's either just... It's just all white men in a room. Yep. Which is like...
Yeah, never that's goes probably far, how it was in 1957, but not
never
a great
goes
message.
Far enough to actually comment on it. It just exists
it just
in
is.
It.
Yeah.
And then ultimately just has Jennifer Aniston in a speaking role.
Oh my God, I forgot that was her.
Yeah, that's
that
Jennifer
Aniston. Aniston.
That
yeah,
was
that's
Jennifer
Aniston.
Aniston.
I had no idea.
How weird is that? I never.
Wow. I did not know
but
that Jennifer Aniston
it's not
and
weird.
Vin Diesel
it's
were in
actually,
a movie together.
It's actually perfect though, because 1999, Friends was definitely out at that point. She was probably
like, I'm not
one
surprised
of the big, like, selling
by
point voices.
Oh, her name was on the poster.
For
definitely.
Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
She was a big get. So, we one thing we haven't, landed and talked about yet was our drinking rules for this film, which I feel like we're pretty good.
I've
and
been
we'll
meaning
lead,
to bring that up.
And we'll lead into our next segment. But our drinking rules were... Drink when the Iron Giant shoots something, which happens a couple times, but by that time we were getting low on drinks, so I don't think we followed that as we went on. But it's good rule nonetheless.
We drank more for the second rule.
The second rule is drink when you see art, heavy quotations around art, but you're pretty sure it's actually just trash.
There was a lot of trash art.
Mm-hmm. Art, but not trash.
This was the Beatnik's junkyard that he just turned into art.
Or art. Was it trash?
It
was trash art.
One man's trash is another man's art. That's how the saying goes.
And finally, take a shot for the line that justifies paying Vin Diesel to be the Iron Giant. And I think this is a great opportunity to go kind of round table about what that scene was and why... You ultimately felt it was worth paying Vin Diesel for that line.
I'll go first because I had the first line. The first line is where Hogarth, the little boy, is introducing the Iron Giant to his friend Dean. And Dean is the guy that owns the junkyard and makes the junk art. And he gets the Iron Giant to say Dean.
Mm-hmm.
And it's the most... human word he said so far. And we went back and played it three times because I needed to hear that it wasn't just human. It was actually like Vin's voice saying Dean.
Which is tough because there's a fair bit of alteration on his voice throughout this film.
For sure. But I felt like it was somewhere in the middle of the Dean.
Dean.
I heard Vin.
Yeah, I can't do it because I'm not Vin.
I can't
And
either.
That's why they paid him.
Maybe
big
if
bucks.
We like layer our voices together. Ooh, so like real quickly, three, two, we'll, I'll go three, okay. two, one, and then after one, we all say Dean.
Okay.
Three, two, one, Dean. I think that's going to work pretty well.
We'll have
actually.
To listen to it and see how it goes.
I think
some editing
be pretty
and
good.
Post, and
yeah.
then we'll see.
Yeah. Add a little bit of metal to it, a little bit of iron.
Yeah, we'll do.
Nice. Just shoot some metal straight into its veins.
Anyway, that was mine.
I think
Andre,
and you were the first one to call that
I was
moment.
The first. I felt good about it. And I had an airplane bottle of Woodford Reserve, and I feel very good about that.
I think my
was
line
my
was...
I think we all need to say what our shot was, too.
That's fair.
A soul cannot die. And
it was just souls can't die.
Souls can't die. Souls can't die.
Or was it souls don't die?
It was something like
souls
that.
Souls don't die seems more appropriate.
Yeah.
Souls don't die. Yeah. I liked that line because I thought it was the most serious, soulful line the robot was going to get all movie. So I said, okay, this is the acting line. I'm going to take that. And I had a shot of Buffalo Trace bourbon.
And I think that's actually a pretty good moment because it
Great
starts
delivery.
His, like, reflection moving towards the final act of the film, which is where I found my line on probably one of, like, either the second to last line he delivers in the film.
No, it's the last one.
There's not a lot left for him.
No.
And the line was, "You stay, I go. No following."
But specifically the "I go."
Yes. Well, I think that "you stay, I go," like that moment rings true for not just Vin Diesel, but Dominic Toretto.
Yeah.
Because...
And they're the same person.
They're the same person. And they go through a lot of different moments over the course of the Fast and Furious franchise. But I think there's quite a few moments where Vin feels like he can take it on his own and not incorporate the family. And so that line, "you stay, I go."
Ugh, especially in 8.
Especially in 8.
God.
Which is honestly just frustrating. And I'm going to have to watch that film at another point just to, like, confirm.
Fast week.
Yeah.
Yeah, it'll be fast week. Next year.
Next year. But because of that line, it was the first moment where I kind of actually heard Vin Diesel in it. And I waffled back and forth on it because...
Well, we should
honestly, they didn't need Vin Diesel for this.
We should
talk
about the honorable mention, though.
Yes. And so our fourth, which we are calling our honorable mention.
Because the three of us
Wait,
all
do we all
paused.
Have to take a shot for this one?
No.
Okay.
No.
Just making sure.
No. We all picked. It was just okay. One where we all paused and we're like, oh, another good one.
Another good one.
Yeah.
Which what was
it? I Am Not a Gun.
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
Right. We already talked about that.
Which is also, yeah. Like, probably one of the most resonant moments that the Iron Giant delivers, where the other ones are either delivered by the mother or by Dean, or some by Hogarth.
Hogarth says, "You are what you choose to be," which is also a great line.
Yes. Yes.
Is Hogarth a real name? And why
did
they
pick it? It's a unique name.
It's very unique.
It's not my favorite name.
Was there a reason they picked it for this movie?
Is it like a
specifically... It's got the word art in it, and there's a lot of art in this film.
Okay.
Is it a specific, yeah. Specifically like
is it
50s,
a
50s kind
name?
Of name?
Hogarth. It sounds like Hogarth, which does sound like a 50s kind of name. But
this
it's got
sounds
that...
like Hodor. Hogarth.
Yeah, it does a little bit. It does a little bit. Yeah.
When a Hogarth grows up, do they just go by Garth?
I think so. Yeah. Because
oh, is that what Garth is short for?
Probably.
I always thought it was short for Gartholomew.
Oh. Mm. Wait, Gartholomew's not a real name.
I loved watching that whole thought process play out on your face.
It's Bartholomew.
Yeah, well, Hogarth isn't a real name either.
It's not.
Yeah, I can find Hogarth as a last name, but like...
His last name is Hughes.
Hogarth, I mean, that's a good name. Like, that double H is a good name.
Sure.
Hogarth Hughes?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's not bad. I'll let it pass. And that kind of... any other thoughts on Iron Giant? I think we
not
all enjoyed
really.
It. It was good.
Yeah.
It was solid.
It was fun.
It was a good film.
Yeah, good watch.
And so I think with that, I think this is a great opportunity to bring us to another segment. And this segment specifically is I'm going to have kind of a segment on my own in which both of you can comment on. And I feel like this is important because this is a Brad Bird film.
Okay.
So ultimately this is... the point that Mission Impossible is the best example of a franchise that should be nowhere near the quality it is today.
You said that.
Yes. I'm saying that.
This is his quote.
This is me.
He's quoting himself.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
And there's a couple reasons for that.
That's what you remember him saying that.
I'm saying this up.
Didn't he say that? You said this in the last podcast.
No.
No, he said he wanted to say this in the next podcast.
Oh.
That's what you're quoting.
And I felt
right
like
now.
This Brad Bird thing was like all a nice setup
sorry.
For this.
No, it's fine.
I spoiled
this
it.
This podcast is amateur hour.
But we do research for this podcast.
Yes.
So it's like both a little amateur and then also like, you know.
Semi-pro.
So at the top, this film has Tom Cruise in it. Which, on the surface, is not necessarily a disqualifying factor because he's a relatively good actor, but he has been so tied to this and everything swirling around him with Scientology and who he is as a person and
how short he is.
Everything, his age even at this point, because he is
getting up there.
When I say how short he is, I mean it's like the lengths he goes to hide that.
Yes.
Right.
There's nothing wrong with being short.
Nothing wrong. And he just somehow found this franchise and keeps it going in a way that is honestly surprising.
Yeah.
Number two, over the course of six different films in this franchise, there have been five different directors.
So Fast and Furious levels.
But Fast and Furious level, Fast and Furious had some moments where it focused on Justin Lin, it focused on James, and then James Wan had his moment, and then F. Gary Gray has. So it hasn't been as all across the board because there's that middle section where Justin Lin kind of anchored Fast and Franchise and
got
Fast
and Furious
and turned it into what it is today.
Yeah. Little where Justin Lin pit stop, tweak the gears. Tighten the lug nuts on those tires and put it back on the track.
Yep.
Gas it up.
Yep.
It's good to go.
Yeah.
Okay.
Fill it up with nitrous.
Ben said we could jump in at parts of this, and I did.
This podcast.
And then.
So, like, one, for there not to necessarily be a prevailing creative idea behind this, but for it still to be able to be propelled forward despite all these different creative hands is extremely impressive. Number three, on the surface, Mission Impossible seems incredibly generic. It's just a basic spy film. That's it. There's
nothing.
To make
a good one, to make a good spy film, I think that's why they call it Mission Impossible, because it's really hard to do.
You would think so, but there's also a ton of spy films out there.
Yeah,
James Bond people seem to like that one.
And, like, think about in the past year, there's been Atomic Blonde, Red Sparrow, specifically featuring two protagonists that are women. And then beyond that, the spy theme is so prevalent at this point that is being used and remixed at this point to kind of develop a top kind of the groundwork it's laid. Think about John Wick. Think about moments like that and how it's changed and developed. But Mission Impossible has largely stayed the same. And while the...
It's just a really hard mission.
It is just... Yeah, like, that's what it is.
That's it.
It is in its name. It isn't as catchy. A really hard mission.
Wait, that's what the next one should be called. Mission Impossible. It's just a really hard mission.
It's just really hard.
Hire me, Hollywood. I'm here.
I'll write titles for you.
Next up... Mission Impossible 3 seemed to hint at a downward trend for the franchise. So looking back at this franchise on Rotten Tomatoes, you see that kind of the first three films had a downward trend in the ratings for those films. And based off my own experience, Mission Impossible 2, not a great film. It has its moments, but it doesn't have that authentic core that keeps you coming back to a franchise enough for six installments of it to come out. But somehow, after Mission Impossible 3, Mission Impossible has this grand comeback and comes back to be a film that has since then had steady installments of basically 80 or 90% on Rotten Tomatoes.
It's like really high.
It's very impressive.
Especially for an action movie.
And speaking for myself, my experience with the more recent Mission Impossible films, I've been very impressed by the quality and thought that I've been put into them. It hasn't been enough to get me to go back and watch them on multiple occasions, with the exception of Mission Impossible Ghost Protocol. But I have been very impressed by what has come out, so much so that I'm looking forward to the newest Mission Impossible.
When does that come out?
Very soon. This year.
Is that in April or May?
Mission Impossible, which it, and the subtitle for this one is Fallout.
A Very Hard Mission? Oh, okay.
Yeah. Mission Impossible, Fallout, A Very Hard Mission. comes out July 27th, 2018. So it's still on its way, but some...
It's like 2 days before our anniversary. Do you want to do that?
Well, I guess we've got that planned.
Yep. So we'll be seeing it.
Okay. That's great. I'm glad you are planning this on its way or daring our podcast. But I felt like it was a franchise that should not have come this far, for one. And so I kind of wanted to call it out as both a moment of the powers that be being able to turn a franchise and a creative property around into something kind of interesting and different, and having moments that are both humorous and high action, and how impressive that is in this modern day and age, especially when you're dealing with a property that seems somewhat boring or trite. And I just kind of wanted to call out how impressive it is that they've been able to turn that around.
And bravo, Mission Impossible.
Yeah. Best example of a franchise that should be nowhere near the quality it is today.
I agree. Even without the research, when you said that originally, I agreed with that.
Yeah, like it's a
you don't expect a new Mission Impossible to be a good movie.
Especially like, imagine if Shrek had been kicking around, like after 3, they gave themselves
they made 3 more.
Yeah. Shrek one, they gave themselves like 7 or 8 years just to like sit back on it, and then they came back and were able to deliver it at a better quality than what they had the 3 previous. Like, that's pretty darn impressive. Yeah. Now, yeah. Shrek is not the same property as Mission Impossible, but to give you that idea, like, that's pretty darn impressive.
Your move, Disney. Disney?
DreamWorks?
Pixar?
DreamWorks.
You're right. Your move, DreamWorks?
Yeah, that's not a Pixar property. Pixar wouldn't touch...
Wouldn't make that garbage?
All-star with a 1,000-foot pole.
No way.
Hey, now. They're all-stars. Get your game on.
Go.
I heard Smash Mouth hates playing that song.
Oh, I believe it.
Oh, I'm sure they do.
And they're still playing it. And
they have to.
It's their biggest hit.
That's gotta be torture.
I also don't think they're, like, actively touring. They're touring the, I'm going to forget the word.
Vans Warped Tour?
No.
Is that still a thing?
Yeah, it is.
Probably.
Nice.
What? Yeah. All right. Big plans, yeah. All right. If a county has a fair.
A county fair.
Is that it?
State fair?
State fairs, yes. Smash Mouth is definitely playing the state fair.
They're like the perfect headliner for a state fair.
Yeah, that's kind of their tour, their can you name area
a
right now.
Single other song that they made?
No.
Me either.
I can't.
Sorry, Smash Mouth.
I honestly wasn't the biggest Smash Mouth fan.
We're not mouthers. None of us are mouthers here.
I think Smashers would be better.
I know. That's why it sucks that they got stuck with mouthers.
At least it wasn't like Mouthheads.
Smouthers? Ugh, that'd be terrible. That's not looking good. They could have done worse.
Yeah, that's true. That's true.
And yet they ended up with Mouthers.
Can't win them all.
Yeah, they're not all going to be winners.
They're not all going to be winners.
Like this podcast.
This was quite the podcast. Can we talk about this podcast for a second?
It's fine.
It's fine.
This has been one of our weirder podcasts.
Yeah, I think it's because we're sitting on the ground.
This ground thing, I don't know if it's going to work out, I'll be honest.
I'm extremely uncomfortable.
I think the audio quality is great, but we need to figure out a new solution.
Also, the cat has tried to walk on top of us like 3 times.
Not helping.
He's been on the paper bag all night.
Yeah, that's our fault for leaving a paper bag out, so you can't blame the cat for that. Like, cats are going to go after paper bags. It's just part of what they are.
It's their catnip.
Good podcast. This has been a great conversation.
Wait.
Oh. Are we not going to talk about other movies that we've been watching?
Oh, yeah. We for sure.
Movies okay, well, I... Can
that's
we,
fine. You can don't I need do to it? Update us.
Can
yeah,
I do go for it?
Yeah, and I can I talk about Pacific Rim.
Okay, great. So I recently had the privilege of watching Battle of the Sexes on an airplane.
Question. You told me you did not watch the entire film, though.
I watched half of it.
Review the half, please.
Yeah. So, like, full disclosure, I will spoil the first half for anyone listening to this.
And you can go to wikipedia.com to spoil the second half.
So, I didn't love it.
Oh, okay.
That's the Rotten Tomatoes headline. I didn't love it.
It's a two-hour movie, for starters.
That's like a negative 20 right there.
I watched half of it, and I didn't even see the tennis match that the movie is about.
I mean, that's fair. I wouldn't want to spend... Wow, you know nothing about this film.
I did not know this was a movie before now.
Wait, have you not seen, like, there's this specific poster of Emma Stone and Steve Carell, and, like, that has been the predominant image and scene that has been around this film since the beginning. It is rare that a film has, like, this kind of image that is you see it everywhere.
I didn't.
I've never seen a trailer for this.
I imagine
this
was a movie from, like, the 90s or 2000s.
Oh, okay.
No, it came out last year.
Yeah.
Wow, yeah, I missed that one.
Emma Stone and Steve Carell are both really good in it.
I imagine
it's going to be similar to I, Tonya, in that when I'd gotten to the end of the movie, they probably would have shown the actual people, and I would have thought to myself, oh, wow, they did a really good job of imitating them. I didn't get to that part of the movie, though, so that's just pure conjecture on my part.
Mm-hmm. So you didn't love this first half?
Well, so the majority of the movie is about how Billie Jean King. I couldn't remember if King was the last name.
King's a weird last name.
Yeah, Billie Jean King it takes place in the 70s, which is like this really pivotal part of the feminist movement. And so feminists in general at this point in the United States are just kind of people who resist that movement make fun of them all the time and are resisting that movement, and they don't really acknowledge that all they want is equality, mm-hmm. which is a completely normal thing to want. And so there's so many points in the movie where they just hit you over the head with all of the men in this movie think that women are lesser, mm-hmm. and there's all these obstacles that women have to go against, and just like blatant sexism, and it got to a point where I was like, you're not even getting the point across that this is bad. You're just making this too much of the movie. It just got really old.
Yeah.
Like, I was just sitting there and I was like, geez, this is hard to watch. Like, I get that it was like this. I already get this. I got this, you know, 30 minutes ago, but they kept hitting you over the head with, hey, guess what? This guy's really sexist. Did you catch that? Try it again. He's really sexist.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I didn't even get to the point where they actually play tennis. So.
Sounds bad.
Yeah. Well, I don't know. Maybe the other half of the movie, like, makes up for it, but. Yeah.
In my experience, was it supposed to be a comedy? Was it billed as a comedy?
Yes.
Okay.
Was it?
I believe so.
It was definitely a drama.
Okay.
There's also an extended... like, Billie Jean King falls for this hairdresser who's a woman, and the majority of the first half of the movie is about their relationship.
I mean, that's fair, because that comes, like, knowing me adding a little bit to this, they had to keep their relationship relatively secret just based off of...
And they,
predominant
they again,
lead into
that's
that.
Another thing that they just hit you over the head with.
Yeah.
Like, it just, that was another thing that really wore on me, where it was like, multiple people in the movie tell her that she's being reckless, she can't reveal this, she shouldn't be doing this. And I don't even feel like they had to have that conversation. I think the environment, the world they create in the film would have told you that without them saying it explicitly like three or four times. That was what I really didn't like about it, was there's no nuance to it. It was just too much. And not enough tennis. I wanted to see more tennis.
Sounds
tennis
like
is
it.
A really exciting sport.
Yeah, it is. I like watching tennis.
Right?
Yeah.
You used to play tennis.
I did. It was fun. It's a good sport.
Yeah, but you threw the match. You could have gone to state.
I don't want to get into that. It's too hot under this blanket. Another story.
What a character development moment.
Yeah.
Think about the movie that's made after Andre's life later on. And that moment where it zooms back as a flashback into this moment where he throws
National championships.
Yeah, and he throws this game to get back to a Blazers game, if I remember.
No, 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 not even a Blazers game, but the Blazers dancers.
Yes.
Yep.
Let's be
specific.
And we managed
to get into it, didn't we?
Zoom forward 40 years later, and who knows what's happening. Oh, that's a good story.
Yeah.
Mission
Impossible. The Blazer Dancers.
So I watched, I revisited Pacific Rim. Pacific Rim Uprising is just around the corner, or at the time of this posting, it has come out, which is a large possibility.
It's so cool talking about the future like it's the past.
I can't wait.
Blows my mind every time.
So cool.
And I feel like I have only seen this film once before, and I needed to go back because I enjoyed the film. But I know for sure that both Leanna and Andre do not love this film.
I think as time has passed, Andre has grown more adamant that he didn't like it, and I have just felt more ambivalent about it.
Okay. All right.
To be clear.
Ambivalence is not good enough.
I mean, ambivalence isn't like... Probably didn't see enough to...
It was one of those action movies where it was like the last hour of the movie is one long action
Here's the thing, though, Andre. You watched the movie like 4 years ago. Ben watched it the other night. So let's let Ben tell the story.
Okay.
Cool.
And directed by Guillermo del Toro.
Was it really?
Yeah.
Wow.
Academy Award winner Guillermo del Toro. And this film definitely toes the line between being a little bit of camp and a little bit of over the top. And it feels very purposeful in those moments because it is pulling from a long history of mech films and mech anime and kind of kids television shows, things like that. Those moments where... there's a lot of pomp and circumstance given to just the mech appearing on screen. Like there's a large buildup over the course of that, which kind of for animated shows was all about filling out time to a certain extent. But it also has the impact of rising the tension and the excitement for what ultimately comes. And I feel like this film ultimately does a good job of both kind of paying homage to those moments while also being just kind of campy enough and over the top that you can kind of forgive it for its more ridiculous plot points and kind of simplified storyline because in essence, it is a film developed out of Saturday morning animated shows and things like that. And so it has its like big personalities and clear connections to like, oh, China has this very clear robot and is going to be painted red because it needs to be very clear about how it depicts things. But ultimately the film does a good job of showing both interesting action that kind of develops and improves over time while also showing close kind of character relationships that aren't necessarily romantic. And while you could read into the main character of Mako Mori and Charlie Hunnam's character as being romantic, you could also just as easily view it as being platonic in that they never share a kiss and it is, I read it as platonic.
I remember
okay.
that.
Yeah, because yeah. that was definitely my reading into it as well, and I feel like that is largely rare.
The only reason that you would think it was romantic is because in every other film it has to be romantic. And yep. so you're trained to think that way.
Yep.
But I there's nothing else in it that I remember reading it completely as platonic.
Yeah.
In my opinion.
Cool. So I'm glad I wasn't alone in that. Even though they definitely like hint at it, but I feel like both characters ultimately decide after maybe they go into each other's heads.
After an experience like that.
Yeah, I mean, you're drift compatible. And so I feel like the film is still a very solid film. It has incredible action set pieces. The CGI holds up pretty well. And all this to say is I'm very nervous about the sequel coming out because it trades a little too closely to Transformers in a way that...
Oh, do you not like Transformers, Ben?
It's not my favorite.
No? Not a big fan?
No.
All
right. I could leave it. I could leave Transformers.
I hope they just never stop making Transformers films.
They're not. There are.
Do you think they're, like,
I think they're on their way out.
Do you think no? Do you think they're like Star Wars, where Disney has basically said we're just going to keep making them
until they stop making money?
Yeah. Do you think? Well, Transformers is still making money.
Yeah, Bumblebee's coming out this year, and then there was some pitch decks that leaked out saying that they're going to reboot the franchise with the director of the Bumblebee film that's coming out later this year. So you can bet Transformers is not going away anytime soon.
Yeah, I guess not.
I mean, if they turn Transformers into something good, sure.
We'll see. Maybe in the reboot.
I could say that that's the franchise that should be bad. But
it's just a lot of collateral damage.
It is. It's also just not good. The plot lines don't make sense.
Do you think at one point they'll have a female Transformer?
They're all asexual.
Are they, though?
Are they, though?
I mean,
they're robots.
Maybe they're asexual, but I don't think they're agender.
They give them a masculine voice.
Sure.
You've got a good point there, Leanna.
They give them a really
Okay.
I'm sure, just saying, what if one of them sounded more like the default Siri voice or the default Alexa voice?
Maybe I'm wrong.
And also, whenever Bumblebee spoke with a voice that was similar to a woman's, they would always somewhat make fun of him. So
that's not great.
No.
Wait, what if they do an all-female robot reboot of Transformers?
All Megan Fox,
and it's everything. Still bad.
They're all voiced by Megan Fox.
What? Oh, that would be such a good.
That would be so good. All right,
maybe I'd be back on board because that would be like.
I'd 100% be on board for that.
The comeuppance Megan Fox probably deserves after having to deal with Michael Bay.
All of Hollywood's sexiest voice actresses, like Scarlett Johansson. I would love to listen to a voice or a robot. Well, that was her, but. A Transformer voice by Scarlett Johansson.
And she's actually just playing the same character.
Yeah. She's the AI.
Yeah, they just put her AI into a Transformers because they were like, why not?
It works.
I'm just saying, Hollywood, I would watch that film. I would go to that Transformers movie, and I haven't been to a Transformers movie in years.
Oh, and I know what the logo can look like. Instead of one of the O's, it's just...
It's a
gender sign for women.
Yeah.
Perfect.
I thought it was going to be transform hers.
Also good. Also good.
That's even better.
Thanks. That was my addition.
And with
that. I didn't watch any movies, so I'm out.
They could release on International Women's Day.
Oh, there you go. This is the perfect corporate.
We just gave you the whole plot. We gave you actor suggestions. And we gave you a release date. Hollywood, hire us.
Yes.
We're ready.
We're very good at this.
I think the joke is that Transformers movies don't really have a plot, so we gave them all they needed.
You're right.
Yeah, we just said there's women in it. That's it.
Yeah.
That's the plot.
That's the plot.
You could build out from there.
Yeah. Just do what you usually do.
Collateral damage. And
just do what you usually do, except it's women.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know, somehow set it in the medieval times with swords like you did last. Maybe this time you set it in ancient Egypt.
Yeah, you go back a little further.
Cleopatra.
Cleopatra.
Did they already do Egypt, though, in the first Transformers? I think they got to go to Japan for this one.
Ooh, okay. We can't give all this away for free. We got to keep some
of it.
Yeah, we got to stop now.
We have to save our big ideas. And with that, this has been another episode of the Munch Podcast. You can find our content. I gotta stop saying content.
You gotta stop saying
content. I gotta stop saying content. At getmunched.com.
Say our media? That's worse.
Yeah, that's not great. Our posts.
Our stuff.
You can find our stuff at getmunched.com. We are on a variety of social media services, Letterboxd, Instagram, Twitter, Pinterest, and Facebook. You can probably search us at Get Munched Up and find us there. Also, we would love to answer any questions you may have. You can send questions to getmunchedup@gmail.com. It can be anything. Anything you have off the top of your mind, send us a question. We'll answer it. And with that, I think this has been a good conversation. Good day.